Hello? Can painkillers have an adverse effect if it reacts to other medication you are taking? Are you putting your health at risk because of long-term use? These are the questions we ask ourselves. Tonight we're going to have as a guest Selena Lindsay. She will be joining us soon. If there's anyone out there, if you want to call in, it's 347 850-1243. Press 1 and you're on the air. This is your host, Paulette Young, with World Integrity News Network, Reach All America, America Health Crisis. All right, this is Monday. We're on from 6 to 8 p.m. We had some technical difficulties in the beginning, but we're all right now. All right, there's a group called they're called Health Watchdogs. They warn us they warn us about different things like some, these painkillers, especially if you're not following the doctor's direction, can cause heart attacks, can cause renal failure, can cause stomach problems, bleeding ulcers, strokes. Should be used at the lowest dosage over a short period of time. You should always let your doctor know you're taking over-the-counter painkillers, because if you don't, it might affect the medication that you're already on, or you may have a pre-existing condition that warrants you not to take those painkillers. That's the disadvantage. Every year we find out people commit. They may say they commit suicide. Did they really commit suicide, or were they uninformed of what's happening to their body? That's, so unfortunate. A lot of things people don't know. They'll mix aspirin with and think you can take ibuprofen also, or they'll take you may be diabetic, and you take a certain painkillers, and it interferes with your diabetes, and you wonder why your blood sugars are out of control. So there are consequences behind not following the doctor's orders or lack of understanding. Ask all the questions. A lot of things you today you can Google even, but don't take your life into your own hands and put yourself at risk. Or your loved ones put themselves at risk. It's not worth it in the end. You should do something to keep your body alive, not to kill it. Again, this is Paulette Young, your host, and this is World Integrity News Network, Reach Out America, America Health Crisis. Again, you can call in if you want to join in the conversation. 347, I'm sorry, 850-1243, Paulette Young, your host. Okay, we're talking about painkillers. Is it okay to take it on a regular basis? Is it okay to mix it with other medications? Or, well, is there any side effects from mixing medicine together? There are so many things out there. There's so many things to dent your pain. And some people are in chronic pain where that when they even try to take even a little of something, just touch anything. So what should that person do? How are they going to make it through? Some people, when they have pain in their body, blood pressure goes out of control. So if you don't do anything to reduce the pain, you're gonna end up a mess that way, or end up with a bad a heart attack or a stroke. So it's not like they can ignore the pain. They have to still deal with it. And what did our parents do? Long time ago? I remember that smelly Bengay. That's what my parents used. Bengay. And then there's other things. They didn't take no pills back in the day. like they do today. Today, they take just about anything, unfortunately. So, what do we do? What should we do? Okay, if anybody's on the line, you're free to talk. This is Paulette Young. Serena, are you on the line yet? Okay. I know you said you'll come in a little bit later or shortly. Okay. All right. They're telling us to use over-the-counter painkillers cautiously, especially the non-steroid anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen is one of them, aspirin. Then you have something called naproxen. And because if you don't follow what a physician tells you to do, or they're unaware of what you're already doing, it can cause a problem. Again, you can call in 347-850-1243. This is Well Integrity News Network, and this is Paulette Young on the line right now. We'll soon be joining in with Selena Lindsay from Share Incorporated. Okay. Some painkillers are known to cause gastric bleeding, like your aspirin can, your ibuprofen can, and so does the naproxen. It's also, they said, they're also responsible for like 12,000 hospital admissions and 2,500 deaths every year, not just one year, but every year. And those numbers are probably higher than deaths reported, because something sometimes falls through the crack and it's not reported. Many people are unaware of the risk. It can react. Some of them react with like your blood thinners, and that's unfortunate. You're on blood thinners, and then you decide that you're going to go ahead and take the painkiller too, and that's not good. Even though, it may have a bad smell, like your topical cream, you can work. That it worked for your parents, it'll work for you. Most people, there's a whole generation that don't even know about the things that are there. They're totally unaware. Scientists at the Musculoskeletal Biomedical Research Unit at Deese University suggest to use the topical cream first before you use the oral painkiller. Older people, like a lot of people, and not even just older, they have knee pain. They said they should always use pain relieving creams first. Try that first instead of taking the oral medication, especially if you have other medicines that you're taking at the time. You need to check with your doctor before you get involved. Another good thing you can do is diet and exercise has shown greater effectiveness, easing pain and improving your mobility. Now, what some people will say is, I can't exercise because I'm in so much pain. So what should they do? Sometimes, some physicians will say, if you can slowly work through it, because over time, if your diet has changed and you have began to take small walks or do some of the things that doctor told you to do, you will see improvement. In most people, they do see improvements. They feel improvements. They have more energy. And then it said one report showed that, especially with the weight being a factor, especially if you have knee and leg problems, that for every extra pound of weight
there's 4 pounds of pressure onto the knee joint. So just think, if you took off 1 pound at a time, then that's 4 pounds of pressure off of the knee. That's a good thing. They also said that 1 in 5 people over age 45 have what they call osteoarthritis. That's arthritis of the bone. Osteo is just bone. And they have that in their knees. This number, they said, can double by 2035 because of obesity and the aging population. So if you don't get certain things under control, you'll be part of statistics as far as having that knee pain and being a part of statistics that shows that people overweight, poor diets, have more problems. Okay. They also mentioned that you can take something. A lot of physicians will recommend glucosamine. That's a natural compound. It's a building block for like your ligaments, your tendons, cartilage, and the synovial fluids, which cushions your joints. And it's a key ingredient in many in your joints, in many parts. It reduces the stress when you have that in your body. So you can buy that over the counter, but some people don't realize that even though it's effective for osteoarthritis, it can disrupt diabetes medicine at the same time. And that's a problem. So even though some of the reports are showing that the over-counter painkillers might help relieve pain in osteoarthritis, but it's not effective. People don't know this. You have osteoarthritis. You also have what you call rheumatoid arthritis. And so even though some of these things are effective in the osteoarthritis, it's not effective for rheumatoid arthritis. You can talk to anyone that have those symptoms or conditions. You always hear talk about fish oil and rose hip. You know, fish oil is a omega-3 in fish oil. That's what's there. And there's documentation that it does help osteoarthritis. It reduces levels of inflammation. Okay, and then you have another ingredient, natural herb, which is rose hip. It's also supposed to help in the area of osteoporosis. So these are some good painkillers, but if you have pre-existing, as I mentioned before, like say you're diabetic, even though it's a natural compound, the glucosamine, it can interfere with your diabetes medication that you may be on. So tell the doctor what you're doing. Don't just do it on your own. Again, this is World Integrity News Network, Reach Out America, America Health Crisis. This is Paulette Young speaking. You can call in 347-850-1243. Press 1. Okay, Selena, are you on the line? Okay, go ahead and come on. All right. They said death rate has risen in the United States since 1970 from overdose of painkillers. A list of some of those painkillers is anything like paracetamol. They normally people take that one for headaches and non-nerve pain. You have ibuprofen. A lot of times people take that to reduce inflammation and for pain. Codeine, that's used too. There are so many things out there on the market right now. And so if you must, it's very important that you tell your doctor what you're taking, so he can advise you. to just do it on your own or something's not working, you need to tell your doctor, because some of these strong medicines, they don't work. Some people get no relief. But the doctor needs to know. Don't keep trying things on your own. Morphine is another one, but it's known as the strongest painkiller available. Is it working? Some of the painkillers that I want to talk about is anything from your Buffer, Bayer, Anacin, like aspirin. You have Excedrin, that's your acetylcysteamine. You have something called Vanquish, and that's a combination of acetaminophen and aspirin. You also have, they'll call it either Nuprin, Advil, or Motrin. That's your ibuprofen. You have something called Naproxen or Aleve. Again, these are powerful anti-inflammatory painkillers. You have Motrin 800, effective use as an antipyretic or analgesic, and again, it's used to treat things like rheumatoid arthritis and musculoskeletal issues. You have another one called Cilibrex, normally that's used for rheumatoid arthritis, but some of the things it can cause, it can increase the risk of bleeding in stomach, it can cause stroke, it can cause heart attacks. A lot of times people don't realize some of the problems with the painkillers, and that's why it's important for you to tell your doctor what you're doing. He may prescribe something, but you have to let him know. If some people will take what the doctors prescribe and they'll take something else. What about Tramadol? That one can cause, even though it gives relief from moderate pain, it can cause constipation, nausea, dizziness, drowsiness, headaches, and vomiting. You have another one called Demerol. That's one of your opiate drugs, a synthetic opiate drug. It's considered the most powerful painkiller. That's one of them. So you don't want to abuse these things. You have something called Lorazep. That one has acetaminophen and hydrocodone in it. How about good old Vicodin? Okay, or Lorazep Plus, or Vicodin ES, or Norco. Some of these, if you take in large quantities, it can cause overdose and it can destroy your liver. You have Lortab. The strength of Norco is estimated it does not exist while studies were conducted, so they're not sure of what strength may be causing the problem. You also have what they call Vicodin HP, oxycodone. That one's Paracet. Or you got Paracodone. That's aspirin, and you got oxycodone and terephthalate and oxycodone hydrochloride in it. And some of these medications have chemicals in them that is known to cause cancer and tumor. Oxycodone, you have that, MS Cotin, that's a morphine sulfate. You have something called fentanyl. All of these can cause problems. So the recommendation is you have to let your physician know what's going on. Don't take it upon yourself. Again, you're with World Integrity News Network, Reach Out America, America Health Crisis. This is Poet Young speaking. And you can call in if you like. Area code 347-850-1243. Press 1, and you're on the air. Is anyone on the air right now? Okay, Selena? Okay, she'll be with us shortly. So in the meantime, I'll continue talking. Okay. Is there dangers of mixing the painkillers? Like, can you mix it with alcohol? Can you mix it with weed, smoking pot? Is there a problem with that? Taking painkillers and weed together while intensifying the effect is not recommended, because it will. It'll intensify the effect. But some reports said weed and painkillers together may be beneficial. So my advice to you would be to check with your physician. That's what you'll have to do. The doctors know best, not us. So, and that's what you want to do. Check with your doctor. Don't just, you know, take it upon yourself. Okay. Again, this is World Integrity News Network. Reach Out America, Paulette Young speaking. 347-850-1243. Okay. Bobby, are you there? Again, you're on 347-850-1243. World Integrity Network. Yes, this is Paulette Young. Again, your host for World Integrity.
Talking about our topic today is okay. We're getting Celine on the line right now. Hello.
Hi, Paul. It's Keeper.
Hi, Keeper. I wasn't sure if Selena was on the line because I'm not able to see on my end.
Yes. There's a few things going on behind the scenes. Blog Talk is being a little bit difficult this evening.
Okay.
We've had a little bit of trouble getting an engineer to run the board.
Oh.
And you are live, and I just wanted to break in here and speak with you for a couple of minutes. On the other side of the break, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be, Paulette, you're going to be brought back in with the intro to the show. I wanted to let you know.
With the what of the show? I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
The intro to this show, the
mm-hmm.
Epic Orchestra, guys. Okay? And when you hear that, we're going to try and turn the volume down about 15 seconds or so, something like that. But there are people that do have your back. And I want to let you know that. So you're not alone. We've got probably about four people trying to get this thing going for you so that you're not, you know, stuck, you know, adrift in the water without a paddle. It's been really difficult with things that are going on behind the scenes. It's not us. It's not just you, certainly not you, because all you got to do is dial a phone number and sit there and talk. It's
mm-hmm.
actually a lot of things that are going on with Blog Talk. They have a couple of different ways to connect, and they don't seem to want to work correctly.
Oh, okay.
So everyone, if you're listening to this program, if you listen to it in archive, please bear with us. We're getting these kinks worked out. We're yelling and screaming at Blog Talk Radio because that's our format. And it's just been one of those difficult roads.
Oh.
And hopefully we can get these things ironed out for you.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I'm not in contact with them right now because I'm on the line with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm more than welcome to sit here and discuss whatever it is you want to talk about. So what's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind right now, I'm talking about those painkillers. I'm learning that there's pros and cons of mixing the weed with the painkillers. One group is saying it's okay. Another group is saying, no. Well, the one group says it enhanced and that it is okay. And then another group said that it's dangerous to mix the two together.
Well, I'm kind of in agreement with you, okay? And the reason I say that is because if you are to step away from just smoking marijuana or whatever, if you are taking the bribed, hopefully get you unhooked from things like opium or something like that, or some kind of an opiate or something like that. If you're taking that, I can't remember what the name of the drug is. I wish that I could. If you're taking that and then you take, if you go, shoot some heroin or something like that, it will send you directly into withdrawals.
Oh, wow.
And I found this out from somebody that actually has lived this life.
Wow.
I have not lived it directly myself, which I'm mm-hmm. very happy to say, because it's not, a lot of the drugs that people do, they're not fun. I mean, if you're talking about spice, it is a chaser drug, like cocaine. You're going to continue to go after that high that you first got the very first time that you got a high off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very dangerous thing. And in my past life, I actually did smoke something out of a glass pipe and some, I smoked something out of a glass pipe, heroin or trank or coke or something like that. And I actually saw myself trying to spend or sell everything that I could to get back to that. And luckily, I was in a situation where I could not get to going to sell the stuff that I had to go get more because I was going to go chase this high that I would never get again.
Oh, wow.
And that is the kind of thing that people are going after when they mix marijuana and a downer, mm-hmm. a painkiller, or whatever it is. It doesn't matter how you take it. And the same can be said for alcohol. When you take, an aspirin,
mm-hmm.
supposedly you drink a beer, it's going to enhance the effects of that aspirin. And that doesn't necessarily work, people, so let's get straight with this, okay?
hey, now, somebody's going to hear this message, and they may go do just that, mix the aspirin and alcohol just to see what it does to them.
just to see. I mean, here's the thing, okay, if you take Vicodin, I mean, the actual Vicodin, not the generic version like hydrocodone, okay? If you take Vicodin and you're already messed up, you already got the nauseous feeling and you're not feeling any pain from whatever it is that you got from the doctor, whether it was a knee transplant or hip replacement, something to do with your teeth or whatever it happens to be that they prescribe hydrocodone for, which is, again, the generic version of Vicodin. If you get the real version of Vicodin, you're going to get the same effect. Now, if you do this and you drink a beer or you have a glass of wine or you take a shot or you just keep drinking or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
it will compound that particular effect. I've done it. I know it. You're going to feel nauseous. You're going to want to puke, and that's the way that it goes because you need to be laying on a couch in a bed or whatever and stop the pain because that's really what you're focused on. But then come all the side effects. If you are completely obliterated on just alcohol, you're going to get the spins. That's the way that it goes. So you're going to get the spins on top of taking this Vicodin. So you're not going to feel all that much better. So when you're looking at combining drugs and things like that, just don't do it, people, really. It is just something that you don't want to do. I'm 46 years old. I have lived through a lot of stuff. Luckily, I'm still breathing. I'm still vertical on most days.
I often wonder, do people know or is it just lack of understanding? Because I remember years ago I had an aunt. She was on medication, and she decided she already had taken her medicine. I don't know what it was, but then she decided to drink the alcohol. The two combination by the time she left our house. Long story short, she ended up on the psych ward and County General. because I remember my dad had to go down there to see what happened. And I guess she had already ran like 3 red lights, and then, you know, the police pulled her over, but they knew to take her to the hospital because
right.
She was literally out of her mind.
Well, see,
and,
it's kind of both. There definitely is a lack of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then when you're a kid, you know, when you're looking, when you're between the ages of like say 17 and like 28,
mm-hmm.
okay, and that's just a rough ballpark. You're thinking that you're invincible.
That's true.
And these are your college years, you know, your later high school years, and you're going to try this and you're going to try that. And most people with common sense really do understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And there's a as there should be, a great big push to get, you know, people at that age, kids at that age, to not do these things. But you're still going to do it. You know, you're going to rebel. That's what teenagers do. They're going to push the boundaries. And you're going to try these things. You're going to smoke pot. You're going to drink when your parents tell you not to.
Right.
You're going to do all of these things. And hopefully you come out of it on the other side understanding that, well, oh my gosh, you know, I really shouldn't do that. That's like not really the way that I want to be. I don't want to feel that way. I don't need this and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is certainly a lack of understanding. Even people at older ages, you know, they you know, it's not that they're naive about things. It could be that, you know, maybe they forgot. You know,
right.
Yeah, you know, I smoked marijuana when I was in high school or when I was in college. You know, here I am. I'm 60 years old, and the doctor's prescribing me this medication. Well, a beer's not going to mess me up. You simply don't know. So
right.
When the doctor says don't combine this or this, I mean, if you drink alcohol, don't drink alcohol after you take this. If you do, don't operate equipment. Don't go anywhere. Stay home so that you can be, you know, in a safe environment. Because any drug that any person takes, I don't care if it's a prescription drug or if it's a quote-unquote controlled substance,
mm-hmm.
will affect everybody differently. And people really do need to understand that when you're going to your doctor, you're putting your health in their hands. And hopefully you'll get the list of side effects about whatever drug you're given. And me personally, I am not a big proponent of any prescribed medication. I really am not.
Wow.
I really am not.
I know some
there
of
are
the
certain
report-
things. There are certain things that people do need to take that mm-hmm. will do the things that they're supposed to do that you can't find in a natural source anywhere. And I understand
right.
that. And I'm not saying that you know, doctors prescribing medication is always a bad thing. I
right.
want to make that very clear. I am just
but you have,
I don't
I'm
like,
seeing more people become sicker or their condition gets worse because of the medicine. I don't know, the way I look at medicine is like a Band-Aid, and then you keep taking it, and you keep taking it, and there's no coming off it, and then something else goes wrong with the body because it is unnatural. Well, most of it's unnatural that's going into the body. I remember when my mom was alive, she had severe osteoarthritis of the knees. She ran out of her pain medication, and I said, Mom, why don't I go to the health food store and see if there's something natural that you can use while you're sitting there waiting for that, the doctor to give you another prescription. She said when she took the natural, I don't remember what it was called, but it did the same thing that the prescription medication did. In
right.
fact, she would always keep some of the natural. You couldn't get her to switch to the natural, but she would keep a bottle of the natural herbs. I'm not sure what was in it,
right.
but it was an excellent pain reliever. And she
yeah.
said there was no difference in taking versus the health food store.
Well, the unfortunate thing is, like I said, I'm not a big proponent of a lot of prescribed medication. And please forgive me, Paulette. I know that you are a nurse. And
no, respiratory care practitioner, but I'm not
okay.
in the hospital anymore.
Right,
I just
well, you may,
education.
You may have, right, you may have a different view of the of prescribed medication. And I thank you for sharing that thing about the lady there. When I say that I'm not a big proponent mm-hmm. a big supporter of prescribed medication.
Mm-hmm.
It's because I have a different view about the pharmaceutical system.
Mm-hmm.
And
we probably
when,
have the same view. So I'm not a big component of taking prescription medication either.
Okay.
But I am, if you, for me, when I, because when I talk to some of my clients, because I do a lot of educational things, the first thing I ask them, are they ready to make a change? The majority do not want to make a change. So if you're not going to make a change, then you got to take something. Like
right.
diabetes, for example. There's too many people that are diabetic that it could be diet control. Not that they're not diabetic, but do they really need the medicine? Do they really need the insulin? Too many
right.
of them that I've heard say, when they're doing the right thing, all of a sudden the doctor is lowering the dosage of insulin. Meaning, and to the point, some have come off of insulin, meaning that still is what's going in the body. Something's happening
yep.
for the body to be responding to. You don't need it.
Yes.
But the average person won't make that change.
Yeah, you
so
know, we're coming up to the break.
Change.
Break. So
okay.
if you want to throw us to the break, I will be more than happy to stay on, stay on the line and be here with you and talk about whatever you want to talk about for the other half of the break, okay?
Oh, okay. All right.
There you
go. Okay. We're going to go to break right now. This is World Integrity News Network.
We'll be right back after this, ladies and gentlemen. WINNINC 347-850.
Reach Out America Radio, where news is never produced. It's presented with integrity. Join World Integrity News Network 7 days a week from 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central to 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central on blogtalkradio.com/WINN. Also on blogtalkradio.com/WINNINC. We are here to help work toward a better tomorrow.
You're listening to World Integrity News Network and the Reach Out America Radio Network. We thank you and ask you to invite your friends.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Reach Out America Live on World Integrity News Network, where information is never produced, but it's presented with integrity.
Well, I'm guessing that we're back because I haven't heard another commercial.
Oh, okay, because normally they play two.
Usually there's a couple of them, but that's fine.
Yeah, because I wanted that HIV one to play because the HIV walk is coming up.
Well, if
here
it ends
in
up
California.
Playing between now and the time we're talking, the next couple of minutes, we'll go ahead and stop talking and let it play.
Yeah. I was going to say, I guess I'm assuming Selena Lindsay is not on the line. She had some valuable information. I spoke with her earlier today, and she had mentioned there's a Dr. Seeley. I guess he's all for using medical marijuana for, for pain, but he's against, I guess, I'll be honest, I'm not knowledgeable about the different types of marijuana. It's like having different types of grass growing. You have one kind of grass, another. So there's supposed to be
right.
one that doesn't have all the pesticides and chemicals in it, another that does. So I'll be honest, I'm ignorant.
The little bit of knowledge that I have, okay, when people are talking about medical marijuana,
mm-hmm.
the ideal substance is THC oil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now when you smoke marijuana, and whether it's a roll-up cigarette, which is mostly known as a joint,
mm-hmm.
or in a water pipe, which is usually known as a bong, or in a pipe like in smoking a tobacco pipe or something like that, there's a difference in the amount of ingestion. And the thing that, that doctors are having a problem with and pharmaceutical companies are having a problem with is the amount of dosage. Now, when you have an oil, you can pretty much designate, you know, like 2 milligrams or a milligram or 5 milligrams or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the problem because it is pure THC oil. And
mm-hmm.
that has been proven to help not only individuals that suffer from Crohn's disease. It has been diagnosed or proven to stop grand mal seizures in children.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the oil itself. Now, it does help other things, but the THC oil doesn't help as much as smoking it. So you're ingesting it in a different fashion. Now, there is the argument against, obviously, the risk of lung cancer because you're ingesting a smoke, obviously, into your system, like just like cigarettes, okay? But when you smoke it, it helps better with glaucoma, it helps better with Crohn's disease, it helps better with certain different things. It helps better with cancer patients to get them to eat because when you go through chemotherapy or radiation therapy, you don't want to eat. You're throwing up everything.
Mm-hmm.
And something that marijuana actually does, whether it's smoking it or taking a THC oil, you know, as an elixir, if you will, it still gives you what everybody as a pot smoker knows as the munchies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're going to eat stuff. That's really what you're going to do. It is actually certain parts of the body, it is a stimulant.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, when you are high, okay, whether or not you smoke it or you ingest the THC oil, because that is the actual chemical that gives you the feeling of being high or euphoric or out of it or just lethargic or whatever, okay? Immediately, that's the feeling. You don't want to do anything. You just want to relax. You want to kick back. Some people want to go to sleep. There's some people laugh their heads off. Some people get paranoid. There's a myriad of different side effects of it. But the one constant is that it does make people want to eat. You get what is called the munchies. So you eat anything in the house. You're going to eat Oreos. You're going to eat Doritos. You're going to eat Lay's. You're going to eat Pringles. You're going to eat, you'll probably eat fish food, really. I mean, you don't want to actually make anything because you're too high to actually make anything. So whatever it is that is at hand, you're going to want to eat. That's why they call it the munchies. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, certainly for people with cancer or certain kinds of cancer, where they don't want to eat because, like I said, they're going through radiation therapy or they're going through chemotherapy or whatever it happens to be, they're going to lose their hair. They're going to throw up constantly. And those are the side effects
mm-hmm.
that THC, however you ingest it, does counteract. It's been proven, and not enough research has been done on it because the federal government has said it is on a restricted or a controlled, quote-unquote, substance list. And so obviously across the United States there's this big debate about whether or not to use it or how do we go about it, you know, can we
mm-hmm.
prescribe it or can we make it legal? And right now there's a couple of experiment states, California being, you know, one of them being parts of California, obviously Colorado, which has gotten the most news. And there is, of course, certain stipulations to it. But there is, in my mind, it is a natural substance. And the benefits, even if you take the THC away from marijuana, then it becomes hemp. And there is such benefit to a crop of hemp that it can be beneficial for so many Americans across the United States. You don't even have to smoke it. And if you don't want to smoke it, don't smoke it. It's a choice. If you don't want to smoke cigarettes, you don't smoke cigarettes. If you don't want to drink alcohol, don't drink alcohol. It is a choice. Nobody is forcing you to do this stuff. No matter what it happens to be, controlled or not. So when you're talking about this stuff.
The other question, like you have the THC oil, is there different grades? Like you have different grades of different things, meaning like the organic, for example. You have the organic milk versus the other. One's supposed to be better than the other. So with this THC oil, is it in that same classification? One oil is better than the other because of the makeup of it, or is it all the same?
Well, THC oil is THC oil to my knowledge. I can't speak to that because I simply don't know. And, I mean, you're going to get, when it comes to actually growing plant itself, this is general knowledge based across, you know, my lifetime of experience, which, I'm, like I said, I'm 46 years old, and I don't smoke a whole lot of marijuana. I have. I've tried this. I've tried that. I've smoked this here. I've smoked that there. Mm-hmm. I've smoked it in a water pipe or a bong. I've smoked it in a joint. I've smoked it in a pipe, okay? Mm-hmm. I've got no problems admitting that. And, you know, if I was to be drug tested right now, I would not pop positive. I would be clean because I don't smoke it on a regular basis. Now, when you're talking about different grades of smoking it, there is definitely different grades of smoking it. Some plants have more THC in them than others.
Oh, okay.
And it does come down to generational plant. Okay, if you take one plant, and it could be, you know, what would be called ragweed, basically, in the marijuana world, and you try to smoke it, you might get a little high, and you smoked a whole bunch more, you still might get a little, and you smoked a whole bunch more, and you still might just get a little high. Now, you take that same plant, and you wait for, you know, you actually are able to let that plant grow through, you know, 2, 3, 4 seasons and mature, there might be more THC in that plant, you know, 2, 3, 4 seasons down the road than there were on the first time you grew it from a seed.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I know, THC oil is THC oil. It doesn't matter what plant you're getting it from. And I can, like I said, I can't speak to that specifically.
Yeah, because Selena, I guess something must have happened. She's not coming on the line because she mentioned, I'm not familiar with him, but there was a Dr. Seeley. I'll have to look up his information. And he was saying there is a difference in the marijuana plants themselves. Some have certain things in it that makes it more dangerous for the body, where others is more, I guess, I want to just say pure, or doesn't have certain substance in it that makes it, you know, healthier for the body rather than, you know, causing a problem. But that's, it's out of my league as far as knowing
all the facts
in that area.
I'm gonna be doing some more research on this because it is something that is on the horizon, if you will, of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And it really does come down to basically the same kind of thing as cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you go back to the 40s, 50s, we used to have television commercials that promoted even doctors that smoke, and they would
mm-hmm.
prefer a Camel over any other brand, and this was one of the commercials that was out there. I mean, if you remember, I don't know how old y'all call that, and I'm not going to ask, but if you remember, Ronald Reagan, yes, the President of the United States, used to want to get people to smoke, I think it was Chesterfields.
Mm-hmm.
And there were other people that were trying to get you to smoke Lucky Strikes, and there were other people that were trying to get you to smoke Camels.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the black and white commercials. I mean, when Elvis Presley was on television, it was nothing to see smoke this tobacco, you know, from this maker or whatever, as a commercial on black and white TV.
Mm-hmm.
And what people didn't realize at the time is it was easier to get those commercials off of television, but so they could be in print, than it was to get alcohol commercials off of print. And really, when you look at how things are really transpiring in America, what was worse? What is worse? Cigarette smoking or alcohol?
Mm.
I mean, that really kind of comes down to common sense when you're looking at things, right?
Right.
So, I mean, it's more dangerous, you know, for somebody to obviously to drink and drive than it is to smoke and drive. And when you're looking at, you know, the comparison of the three, you know, you got nicotine, alcohol, and marijuana, or THC. When you drink alcohol, you're really not paying a whole lot of attention when you're driving because you're all over the road, and you might notice the policeman behind you, but it looks like a whole bunch of pretty little lights and everything. And when you smoke a cigarette and you're driving down the road, it's like, oh, I'm getting pulled over. I guess I better stop.
Right.
When you're smoking marijuana and you're driving down the road, it's like, oh, my God, I got to make sure that I'm driving 55 miles an hour. The speed limit, oh, wait a minute, the speed limit is now 35, so I got to slow down to 35. I got to make sure that I'm doing 35 miles an hour. And where's the police? Okay, my seatbelt's on. I'm looking in this mirror. There's a difference to the mental aspect of everything.
Now, people that have, say, abused the marijuana says it does impair their thinking, and it will interfere with their driving. Those are the ones that have said, there was one guy that was on the line some time ago, and he said he was a pot smoker, and it did impair him. So,
right.
And then it goes back to, like, I'll go back to thinking on the alcohol. Why is it one person seems like they can drink it and not even look drunk, and the next one looks like they're getting ready to pass out? And it could have, and one person might have had a small amount, the other person had more, yet and some people will say, well, that person can hold their liquor. I'm not sure if marijuana works that same way or not. But
it does. It does, because any drug is going to affect any person differently. Like I said, some people will laugh a lot. Some people will get really paranoid. Some people will just want to sit there and do nothing, maybe veg out and watch the TV. It does affect some people's driving. Most of the time, people are too paranoid when they're driving, if they are high. They want to make sure that they're stepping on the brake and they're, like, taking their time when it comes up to a stoplight and things like that. There's not been one death directly attributed to marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always been some other factor. And society or the powers that be, whether it's the ADA or, excuse me, the AMA or some doctor or the government,
mm-hmm.
they're going to dictate, okay, they're going to say, okay, well, this is actually a gateway drug. Well, here's the thing. When you were a kid, and certainly when I was a kid, I was like, yeah, okay, sure, I'll try it. It didn't matter what it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people are going to do that. You know, and sure, there's this DARE thing, and I've always thought about DARE as two different fashions. The D-A-R-E, Drug Abuse Resistance Education.
Mm-hmm.
And when DARE first started, and this is nothing against DARE, but when DARE first started, I looked at this in two ways, one of which was the positive, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, drug abuse, drug abuse resistance, you need to resist drugs, and we're going to help educate you so that you don't abuse drugs,
mm-hmm.
okay, and get caught up in that. And the other one was because when it first came out, I was smoking dope on a pretty regular basis, was, dude, I don't want to abuse these things. I want to make sure that they're okay. So I need to get some resistance education so I can resist abusing drugs. And that way we're okay, if you understand
mm-hmm.
my meaning.
Yeah.
DARE is a great program, and that's what kids need to teach or be taught. And hopefully, it comes from the parents more than the school, because all of the things that we talk about, they're all intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one. It's not just one issue here or one issue there or one issue there. And that's where common sense comes into play. And it just confounds me sometimes. I'm a very political person, Paula, so please forgive me.
No, I think that's good.
It just confounds me when there is a group of people that will get a hold of something
mm-hmm.
and just talk about it and talk about it and talk about it or wear it out or push the agenda, and that's all that they do. The only thing that they do, and they don't realize that this that they're talking about may also be a symptom or a part of something bigger.
Right.
And fixing this one issue is not going to fix the whole problem that you're looking at that they're failing to see.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm speaking on the radio like I am with you now,
mm-hmm.
I'll sit there and I'll go on and I'll take this tangent and I'll take that tangent. But mm-hmm. I do that because everything that we discuss, whether it's your show, whether it's my show on Wednesday nights, whether it is Bill Muckler's show on Thursday nights, he's going to be moving to Wednesday shortly,
mm-hmm.
or John's show on Tuesday nights, or Locked and Loaded on Sunday nights, it doesn't make any difference. All of these things that everyone talks about and discusses are all intertwined.
Yes, they are. I'm in agreement with that, and I'm a piggyback on what you just said. I look at like you might remember when I did the show on HIV, and my concern was the young people, because you have 50% of all new cases is below age 25 coming down with that disease here in the United States, and worldwide it's even greater. Someone once said, did I think it was part of population control when you talk about politics?
Mm-hmm.
Is it part of population? Because nothing is being said. Enough is not being said about the testing procedure. You've been knowing that the procedure is wrong for over 2 decades now, and yet there's no change. And the numbers, we've watched it go up because there's no change. And yet the information is still not out there. I, even all that I've done and anybody else done, we haven't put a dent in that area in getting, and at least where the public, enough of the public knows that, hey, do you really know your HIV status? Are you aware? For example, I met with a nonprofit the other day, and one of the people just knew their HIV status, and I know if you know your status by what you tell me. You tell me you had a test, and normally they tell you to go back for the 3rd month, 6 months, up to a year. And I said, are you aware that that's not necessary? You can know in 11 to 13 days. Then I know you really don't know your HIV status.
Right.
And that's not fair. That is so wrong. It's, to me, a crime.
Well, let me ask you this about that.
Yeah.
All right. I've just found out that we do have another person on the line. Are you expecting a Carol?
Yes, Carol.
Carol, are you there, dear?
Yes, I am.
All right.
Hi,
I'm going to go ahead and let Paulette keep on rocking with the show. If you need me, I'm right here, okay?
Oh, yeah. I have been listening in, and it's very interesting, and we have been speaking about drug abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what did you think about the drug abuse? Well, I was coming from the aspect, is it okay to, like, anything from, you know, taking those painkillers and mixing them, anything from mixing the weed with other painkillers to mixing the weed with, you know, something that the doctor told you to take, and there's pros and cons in both areas, whether you can do that or not.
Yes. Now, my concern is,
mm-hmm.
and it bothers me, drug abuse can lead to mental health issues. And what I have noticed in many cases, if you're an adult and you refuse treatment, then that's it. I think something should be done about that, because the truth is your mind is literally gone. You can't make decisions. As in the case of the alleged gentleman who shot the new team people,
mm-hmm.
He was showing signs of, you know, mental issues, but I suppose because he's an adult and he didn't agree to treatment, maybe, then nobody could help him. And, I mean, I think that needs to be changed.
Okay. You want to go ahead and jump in?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You know, when you're talking about things that are, when you say, you know, I think something should be done, that's one of these programs that dare is, D-A-R-E. And drug abuse, you're going to learn these things as a kid because our schools now are indoctrinating everybody here in the United States. They're indoctrinating every child.
Yes.
And that is part of a problem. Okay. Now, they go through the education or the training of dare, and they want to, and because we, as adults, we understand, we've been there, we've gone through it, we've tested this drug, we've tested that drug, we know the dangers of it, and we don't want our kids to do that. At the same time, even though they go through this training or they go through this education of drug abuse resistance and education, they're still going to try this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that I say that is because what age group right now is going through sex education, and what is now the rate of pregnancy in teenagers? It's gone up. Mm-hmm. Since we have gone to, 10, 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds to teach them about sex education and relied on our school system to teach sex education. Okay.
Yes.
So the something that needs to be done is that parents need to take care of that. They need to take control of that and talk to their kids. I don't know what kind of feedback I'm getting here. I hear a bunch of sounds, but
yeah, I do
parents,
too. I'm not
parents
sure.
Actually need to take control of that, and they need to teach their kids the problem with drugs. They need to teach their kids what sexual education is about, or teach them and opt them out of the programs in school. They don't have to take those programs, okay? If you don't, here is something that I have always thought, and I learned this at about 35 or 36, if I'm not mistaken. When talking about sex education, when you are a teen and you are pressured by your peers, which is something that every person goes through, oh, you got to have sex, or you got to be able to do this, or you got to be able to do that. If you're going to take it in the butt for your boyfriend, or you got to go down on him, or whatever it happens to be, to speak lightly.
Yeah.
The problem is that when teenagers do those things, and they lose their virginity at 15, 14, 13, 16, 19, 20, 22 years old, the bond that is created through doing that is lost. Still, I lost my virginity at 16 years old, and I still remember that girl. I will never, ever forget her because of that. And there is a bond that happens when you do that. And I would prefer that every child abstain from any kind of thing. Stop teaching them about this stuff. They're going to experiment on their own anyway. And what were the statistics, if you will, 60s, 70s, early 80s of teenage pregnancy versus today? It was a lot lower because parents were talking to their kids about sex education.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing happened when it comes to drugs. Parents were talking to their kids about drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And
they were.
At that time, they were threatening them. You do this, I'm going to beat your ass. Excuse me, sorry. But that was really the way it was. And,
you know,
and
what I've learned
were teaching,
when it came to sex education, and it was a big eye-opener. There I was at El Camino College here in California, and it was just one of my regular training classes, not on sex education, but I brought in the area of talking about HIV. And I'll never forget this mother, and it was a huge eye-opener for me. She said, I said, you should empower your teenager with the N-O word, no, that is their body, be it male or female, that no one can just come up, touch it in a way that's inappropriate, touch it the way a husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend may be engaged in. And because they're young, those feelings feel good. You can't say they feel bad, but they've been violated.
And they don't know how to deal with it.
And this is what this mother said to me. How do I teach my teenage daughter to say no when I don't know? Meaning, here's the parent with no training. So how can you train the parent? How can the parent train the child if they've had no training. She posed that question to me. She was totally honest. She said, so I'm at a loss.
I'll tell you what, Paulette. We're coming up this Wednesday on Mindful on my show at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. I'm going to be speaking with Marty Ward.
Okay.
And she is a lady that has created I don't want to call it a movement, but I want to call it certainly an acknowledgement on how to deal with specifically bullies. And I think that a lot of what she is talking about or will be talking about can be addressed to some of this.
Right.
Yeah.
And
when you're doing things with teenagers, they need to have things included with parents too. Because if the parent has no training, when will they ever get it?
Exactly. So, you know, as we were talking about earlier, all of these things are intertwined. It's not any one thing. There's not any one button to push that fixes it all. There's not any one way to go. This is the book for how to raise a kid. There just isn't because all of us are different. Every single one of us is different. There may be certain likenesses. There may be certain generalities. But every one of us is different, and we see things in a different way. And when you're talking about the school system, they're programming our kids, this Common Core thing.
Yes, that's unfortunate. It almost, when you're talking that way, it reminds me of, I don't know if this is extreme to say this, but it reminds me of no different than Hitler.
Oh, absolutely.
Because he got a hold of the young minds and
he created
his own movement and succeeded for a while. We've gone back to that with our school systems, and we program the kids to pass a test. They're not programmed to think for themselves. And if parents don't start at home getting your child to think for themselves, and you think the school's going to do it for you, they're not.
Nope.
Yeah.
And you got to begin at home from the time they're small through when they're two and three, picking what shoes they want to wear. You put three pairs out there, pick one. They're learning to make choices, making the right choices. Oh, we're going to the beach. Here's three outfits. Pick one. You know, because it trains them to make choices, their choices, rather than the system is undoing all that had been laid down years past.
Yeah, and
I don't see many people talking about it. My kids are all grown.
The other side of that is that when those kids make a choice, they have to be willing to accept the consequences of that
choice.
And see, it all plays, there's two sides of everything, three sides of everything, or four sides sometimes. But, you know, if you're say, all right, here's one of the big things that I have a problem with, because parents today at, you know, 7 years old will, or 10 years old, will allow their daughter to put lipstick on or some kind of a makeup. Okay.
That parent is uneducated about lipstick.
Okay.
And
what is it that you're allowing your child their choice? Okay, you put out, you know, two outfits or three outfits or whatever, and, you know, you're going to the beach, okay, and they choose, say, a modest outfit, which would be dynamite, and hopefully that's what your child does. But then they put lipstick on, and they put all this other makeup on, and maybe they put a couple of bracelets on, you know, and they're all getting all fancy and everything like that. Really, what is it that you're teaching your child? You're teaching your child, specifically the daughter in this case, to what? Be sexy. Why? At that age, she doesn't need to be sexy. She needs to be a kid and go have fun. Now, no lipstick. If you want to wear a bikini at that age, fine, but you're not wearing lipstick to add on top of it. You're not wearing a whole bunch of bracelets. It doesn't make any difference.
You know what I've learned being a parent, that especially when they're little, they want to fit in with their peers.
Right.
And it's the majority of the kids, I wouldn't say majority is wearing lipstick, but they do wear like your little bracelets and necklace. And then you have Disney Channel that promotes a lot of that. And they see that too. Because I having daughters, I had to deal with that. And the way, and I learned how to deal with it. I learned about the lipstick wearing. The average child doesn't know that when they put lipstick on a regular basis, their body is developing. So the natural pigment in their lips and things is not going to develop properly if it's hitting under lipstick. The sun needs to hit that so that, that the body continues to develop the way it's supposed to. They don't know that. But a parent, I had to deal with when my daughter was going between 10 and 11, what did she, I can tell her not to wear makeup, but then I went to a seminar and one of the mothers said, they put it on anyway. The disadvantage is they're putting on someone else's stuff. They can end up with infections and all that kind of stuff. So I asked my daughter, I said, you're not in my presence, what do you do? I said, you're not going to be in trouble. Just show me. Here's my makeup. Tell me what you do. She did. She looked like a raccoon. And the mothers encourage mothers to talk to your girls about it. Show them if they're going to do something like that, put it on lightly. Tell them the hazards of putting all that stuff on every day, that it causes wrinkles at an early age.
Let them know the consequences.
And things like that.
Absolutely. Let them know the consequences.
That is what I did, and then I end up with no problem. But I had to accept that she was going to do it anyway out of my presence. I didn't want her to wear someone else's stuff. So the long story short is she eventually didn't want to wear it at all. But I did handle it gently, and because I was like shocked that she even put the stuff on. And she looked horrible. Didn't even look nasty or anything.
And, you know, my sister actually did that. It wasn't makeup. It was actually clothes. And, you know, she would wear, you know, pants over a short skirt. It's that kind of thing. And
you know, see, I didn't have, I'll be honest, I didn't have problems in that area. And call it emotional child abuse, I don't care what they want to call it. My girls understood. Once you left my house, whatever the rules of the school was, you were going to adhere to it. And they were in schools that had, you know, strict regulations. And if you don't follow what they said, do, and they call me up, and, you know, because I've been self-employed for the last 25 years, they call me from a job. I will go to the Salvation Army by the thickest belt. It's going to be around my neck, and they're going to think your mother went crazy. So they believed that I would do that, so they didn't violate the rules. I didn't have time for nonsense. I see parents taking off work, going after the little bad brat. I didn't have time for that. I said, that's crazy. It's costing parents money. You're paying for these kids.
And so, not only that, I mean, if you're sharing makeup, okay,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's all kinds of other things you got to worry about because
mm-hmm.
if you remember as parents, we remember pink eye going around daycare
mm-hmm.
or kindergarten or first grade.
Mm-hmm.
And that does not happen as often later in school, but, I mean, there's other things that can get transferred that way. So don't share makeup. I mean, it would be better if you weren't using it, but
mm-hmm.
if you must, do it in a fashion that doesn't say, oh, look at me because I'm a dork, or look at me because I got a coochie and you want me.
Mm-hmm.
And that is unfortunately the way a lot of our society is leaning.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, you know, you've got the Disney Channel. Well, who are the heroes on the Disney Channel?
Right.
Miley Cyrus, Britney Spears. I can't even name the latest ones because I don't have TV. I haven't had TV in probably 7 years.
Good for you.
It is. As parents, as kids, we are inundated with all of these kinds of things. We've got to have this. We've got to buy that. And we're kind of actually moving away from that a little bit because of how American society is working and how our economy is barely staying afloat,
mm-hmm.
and we're going back to, okay, well, if whatever it is broken, we got to make it work because that's what we've got. And for the last 20 years, it hasn't been that way. It's like, it's broke, I'll just replace it. Well, everybody's running out of money. We don't have any money anymore. Nobody's got any money.
Mm-hmm.
If you do, you're really, really lucky. You must be like at the top, like 2% or something.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going, most everybody right now is living from paycheck to paycheck. If they have a little bit of savings, it is in there in case of an emergency. Like, oh, my,
right.
I mean, my car broke. Now I got to go buy a new engine, or I got to go put a down payment on a car.
Right.
Or I have to make an insurance deductible payment because, you know, something happened to my family, because we all know the ACA sucks.
Mm-hmm.
This is what is transpiring right now. So, you know, your makeup, try not to wear it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Make sure that your kids understand the consequences of their choices. And that's something that I did with my youngest son. And
mm-hmm.
I didn't really get a chance to with my oldest two, because at 4 years old at the time, his mom and I got separated, and she went her way and I went my way, but I still had him from time to time. So I couldn't really instill that in him.
Mm-hmm.
My youngest son, I had quite a bit more time with him. And I told him, I said, dude, these are the consequences. I mean, you can go ahead and throw that rock over that, try and get it over the top of that house, but if you break that window, you got to pay for the window.
Right. And I think when they, if you start them young and they understand consequences, I remember my youngest daughter, she's an adult now, but at age, I think she was around 4, she threw, it was something soft at me. But the idea that she can throw something at me at 4 years of age spoke volume to me. My mind saw, she's older now, that could be a rock. She has, in her thought pattern, that it's okay to do this. So I undid that. Yes, I took her little butt, I spanked her butt with not child abuse. That little girl went and called 911. And that was good. I'm glad she did. They came to the door, and I said, here she is, she's yours. And I'll tell you what I did. I said, because that little tiny object will turn into something bigger, and then you'll say, why didn't I do my job? Police officer looked at my daughter and told her, little girl, please don't call our number.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, it scared the hell out of her. She never threw anything again, not at mom.
Yeah.
No, because you can nick things in the butt when they're little. Parents are afraid to do their job. Parents are afraid to be a parent. I wasn't. Mm-mm. I knew my rights. I knew, you know, right from wrong. And I knew I never hit these kids. And, oh, because you're not even supposed to hit at all. They're crazy. That's why the kids are wild in school and tell teachers what to do, and they have no control. That is
just
crazy.
Oh, I spanked all three of my kids. They got a spanking. They did.
Yes. Yeah, mine did, too. And it was not child abuse. And I'll be honest, it was hard for me to hit any of my kids. And the only reason, because I'm one of those kids that was brought up in an environment where my dad didn't believe in hitting at all. And a lot of it had to do with his own child abuse by his either mom or dad, I don't know which one. But he just didn't believe in spanking. All four of us turned out fine. We weren't in prison or anything. But I just thought, you know, I remember it being hard on my mom because my mom wasn't allowed to touch us. And I remember it being very, very difficult. You're talking about four kids close in age. That was, I thought, when I became an adult, I said, oh, that's crazy. I didn't have concept of hitting, meaning I would have to hit myself first to feel what it felt like, and then the child would be hit, because I just didn't have a concept of how to do this stuff.
Well, see,
I didn't see people hit. So I just, it didn't, there was no, you know, nothing to fall back on.
Right. A spanking,
but,
okay.
Yeah, but I believe in spanking. I'm sorry.
The last one I gave my son, my youngest son, he had gotten in trouble in school. And he actually, somebody picked up a pencil and he thought that they were going to stab him, so he preemptively stabbed this kid in the hand with a pair of the blunt scissors that they got in school with the round points. Okay? So he saw in his mind that he was defending himself, which I'm all for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't care what age you are. If you see somebody that's coming at you with something, defend yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he felt, so he stabbed this kid with this pair of scissors. Kid ended up getting like 2 stitches. But because of the consequences of his actions, I had to give him a spanking because the whole scenario was mostly his fault.
Mm-hmm.
About 70% of it, as he told it, I could see as his fault. And I sat him down and I said, all right, I have to give you a spanking because of the consequences of the choices that you made doing what you did. And the back and forth between this young man and my son, it was actually warranted. I mean, I went and talked to the teacher. I went and talked to the principal. I didn't get to talk to the other side of the family, but I got a pretty good view after talking to everybody that I could, which was my son, the principal, and the teacher. I blamed the teacher for quite a bit of it. It came down to, you know, it was basically about 70% his fault.
Mm-hmm.
Had it been less than that, I probably wouldn't have spanked him, but I sat him down. I said, and that is where being a parent really comes into play, because your kid is going to understand. You can talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And if your child really truly understands the consequences of their actions, it doesn't matter who they are. They're smart. They are really, really smart. They're watching every single thing that you do, everything that you say. It all goes in. It may not come out, but it all goes in.
Yeah.
So.
And then, you know, that's, it goes back to parents need to be parents and stop trying to push their job onto someone else. Before we get off, because I know our time is going to be short right now, I just want to briefly highlight some of the things we've gone over, some of the questions I've already asked that they've been answered. And I had started off, can taking over-the-counter pain medication every day for aches and pain do harm to the body? Of course it can. Over time, if it's not monitored, most painkillers, most physicians would like for you to take it for short period of time, and if you are taking over-the-counter medicine, you need to make your physician aware of what you're doing and what you're taking. And I also mentioned, can painkillers have side effects? And yes, we do know that there can be side effects. Can painkillers have an adverse effect if it reacts with other medications you are taking? And we do know that some painkillers, if you take it with, and somebody's on blood thinners, that can have a devastating effect. We learned that glucosamine, which is highly recommended by your physicians, but if you have something like diabetes and you're taking diabetic medication, it can disrupt that medicine and your medicine may not be working for you. So, and you do have to make physicians aware of your condition, because some people have 5-6 doctors, or the physician has too many patients, so he's not going to remember that one patient. Most of the time they're not even reading anybody's charts. You just come in there, you have to remind them of your condition. You need to speak up, because it's your body. You're the one that has to be concerned about what's going on. Some reports show that like some of the over-counter things people are taking for pain, especially if they have like osteoarthritis, it may work for arthritis, but it doesn't work for rheumatoid arthritis. Some of the things that were recommended for pain, anything from fish oils to the rose hip, those are supposed to be more natural means to take for pain. And then I still go back to mentioning what happened to the Bengay, topical creams that I remember my parents, grandparents, that's all they took. I've never seen them take pills at all, yet their pain, when they had backaches, they put that smelly stuff on them, on themselves. Yet the pain the next day, they seem to be fine. I think we need to go back to the creams and stop popping the pills. And then the death rate for taking some of this stuff has risen and not gone down. There's been overdose on these painkillers. And then I had talked about a long list of some of the painkillers, what those were. Most people are aware of the different ones. And the bottom line is you need to take your health serious. If you have chronic pain, there are other ways to manage it. As been mentioned on the show already, that you don't always have to take a pill to reduce pain. Some of the things the physicians are saying, change your diet. You might not lose any weight, but there may be something that you're introducing into the body that causes inflammation. If you didn't introduce that food item that's causing that, then you may find that you don't have any pain. And you got to begin to, that's why you'll see people go through what they call cleansing. Still, that needs to be up under a physician, not just on your own. And you'll notice that you'll start putting certain things back in the body. You can zero out, well, that one doesn't work for me. And just because it's healthy doesn't mean it's good for your body, for your makeup. And as was mentioned before on the program, that mixing anything from the alcohol with the medication can enhance it in a way that it can be devastating. It alters the mind. There was pros and cons as far as taking weed. I wasn't sure if it was just smoking the pot or taking the oil and mixing it with your medication, how that can have devastating effect, or it may not. So you have two different groups saying two different things. The bottom line is you still need to talk to your doctor, not take treating your body on your own, even with natural herbs and things, because there's not enough studies with the natural herbs, even though I'm all for it. But there are certain conditions where you can build up a toxicity level to some of this stuff and cause death. So that'll be another topic another day. But those are some of the things I wanted to highlight. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think you pretty much covered the gamut there. Yeah, there is any drug, it doesn't matter what it is going to affect any person differently. You're going to have maybe one of 10 side effects. You may get all 10 of those side effects. It doesn't matter what if it's prescribed or if it is a natural remedy or anything, even a controlled substance or a supposedly controlled substance. And I don't think...
I'll tell you, Vicodin normally knocks pain out and knocks the person out. Vicodin, for me, does nothing. Keeps me up the next 24 hours.
Yeah, hydrocodone.
Action for me. Does not knock out pain. Makes me super hyper.
I mean, and if I
can't go to sleep.
If I take Tylenol and codeine, mm-hmm. I get angry. My fuse, it gets really, really short. And I got a pretty long fuse when it comes to, you know, things that upset me or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But when I take that stuff, I get mad fast. And that's not cool. I don't like that. So I can't take that because I know that about myself. And like you're saying, you know, when you're taking things or you're trying things, you can zero this one out or this one out or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a problem with taking Vicodin. I don't have a problem with taking hydrocodone. It's like, oh, okay, well, yeah, whatever. I have a very high pain tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to that stuff, I mean, the prescription that you're given is like 15 pills or 10 pills or something like that. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Whatever. I usually have about, you know, four of them left over, six of them left over because, like I said, I have a pain tolerance. So anything that anybody takes, anything, I don't care what it is going to affect everyone differently.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, you know, the side effects range on any prescription drug. And it always confounds me. Why is it that we have to deal with these side effects? Well, it's
mm-hmm.
because all of these drugs that they create are synthetic. They're not natural. They're not from natural substances. They're from this chemical compound that was made by this other chemical compound that once upon a time might have come from a natural substance, but
mm-hmm.
now it's not natural anymore.
Right.
And that's not to say that, you know, natural is the way to go, because there are some illnesses out there. There are some sicknesses that cannot be, you know, helped,
mm-hmm.
or there's no benefit from taking a natural substance. There just isn't one that's out there that anybody knows about.
Right, because there was
so,
a lady I remember, I'll never forget, on Dr. Oz, and in fact, because he did a whole thing on the marijuana, and it made me appreciate it a little bit more, or a lot more, because there was more understanding. She's never had to take anything like that, but there was nothing to knock out her pain. It was lots of pain.
Right.
She can take one or two. In her case, it was puffs. It wasn't the oil. That she can take one to two puffs a day, knocked out all the pain in her body.
Yeah.
And it made me understand medical marijuana a lot better, too, because it wasn't that a person is going to be smoking it all day long. It's according to whatever the doctor prescribed. And she said in her case, one to two puffs, that's it. a daily dose.
I mean, that's it. Sometimes that's all it takes. And the reason that marijuana is actually on the controlled substances list is because it was grouped in with hemp. And if you go back to 1936, somewhere in the 1930s, 1940s, there was a kind of an economic war going on between the logging industry, the paper industry, and the media, which was at that time print media. It was all newspapers. And individuals like William Randolph Hearst owns a whole bunch of forested land. And if you do some research, you know that he actually was a media, well, back then, I'll say God. He owned a lot of media, a lot of print media. And he was actually selling to his own company the wood pulp to be made into paper from his own forested land, which, hey, you know, that's capitalism for you, so I can kind of understand that. But because he had the money that he had, he garnered a whole bunch of power back then, and hemp and marijuana was actually put on the controlled substances list back at that time. And the only reason it made a such a big splash in the 60s is because really people didn't know what kind of thing this drug, marijuana, which is what they call, you know, reefers, you know, everybody's smoking reefers, what the deal was with it. And that's when they put the THC-based marijuana on the controlled substances list. So coming, you know, this is almost 100 years later, you know, certainly 70 years later, where we're looking at the stuff, and enough people in the United States, you know, dude, this is, nobody's ever died from this stuff. And when you're talking about the war on drugs, I mean, this is a whole other episode, but when you're talking about the war on drugs, how much money are we wasting trying to fight marijuana? When there's, like I said, there's not been one death attributed to it. I mean, that's proven. There's been other factors involved. This person may have had, you know, marijuana in their system, THC in their system, and they were also drunk, or they were also high on coke or crank or some other drug, methamphetamine or whatever it happened to be. And everybody thinks that marijuana is a gateway drug. That's just the first one that everybody happens to be introduced to. And like I said earlier, you know, as a teen, you know, sure, I don't know what it is, I'll try it, sure. I mean, we don't have a clue as kids. We don't. I didn't have a clue what SHRM was until after I tried it. I would not ever try it again because I lost 2 days. I have no idea what transpired during those 2 days. Come to find out that it was liquid angel dust.
Oh, yeah, I remember
it
those
days. It scared me to pieces. I mean, I had no idea, zero idea what it was. I mean, I thought it was like, you know, like smoking a joint, and I was 16 years old. Don't do it. Don't do it. I mean, but that's we can sit there as adults and tell kids, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it all day long, but, you know, kids are going to try it. There's nothing that can be done about it, really. Just educate them and maybe put the fear of God into them. But you got about 4 minutes left, and the national anthem for the show is about 2 minutes and 40 seconds long. So I'm going to let you close up the show and send us on out of here, all right?
Okay. Thank you for joining us in World Integrity News Network. Reach Out America, healthcare consultants. I mean, not healthcare consultants. Reach Out America, America's health crisis. This is Paulette Young, your host. And you join us with a couple more people, and we've been talking about our hot topic was are painkillers that you do take, especially the over-the-counter, are they dangerous for you? The answer is they can be. Especially if you're going to take it for a long time, you don't say anything to your doctor about it. I have a friend that took ibuprofen for a long time. Doctor was not aware of the amount that was being taken, end up with tumors around the kidneys, and hemorrhaging inside. So that's the result of taking something, and, you know, you have to tell your doctor you're in pain. You can't just go and say nothing. The pain is due to something. They need to know the source of the pain and what's the best treatment for the pain. Some people just need to change something that they're eating. Others need to change eating and exercising. Others need medical attention, maybe surgery, whatever it may be. But pain inside the body is not natural, and a physician needs to be notified of that. And if the pain continues, even after you see the doctor, keep going. Be your own advocate. You must go back and forth. If you go to the doctor every week until they discover what the pain is, because if they run the wrong test, they won't know. Don't just let them put you on painkillers and you have no idea what's causing the pain, and then one morning, well, you don't wake up. There's a reason for pain. The body is painful because something's gone wrong, and so that's something else you want to look at. Again, this is World Integrity News Network, Reach Out America, America Health Crisis, Paulette Young. Join us again every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m. That's Pacific Standard Time. And also you can join us Eastern Time, too. So tune in for another week of Hot Topics. We'll have another topic next week.